Good afternoon. You are tuned to the Juno Afternoon here for Monday, the 18th of January, the year 2016. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Today on Juno Afternoon, we'll get a preview of next week's Bicycle Adventure Series with Nancy Peel highlighting her ride on the Denali Highway. Wayne Jensen will be here with a preview of Wednesday's community reception for the Alaska State Legislature. Rebecca Gigin will focus on an upcoming Aware Advocacy class. And we'll learn about Alaska Pella's trip to Carnegie Hall. That writer's almanac, Bruno, music, and more today on a Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, cloudy skies, rain likely later on, low temperatures around 33 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, rain likely, high temperatures around 39 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood in for Antonia Gonzalez. The town of Browning, Montana is considering filing for bankruptcy. The Missoulian Report's local leaders say a failed agreement with the Blackfeet tribe is to blame for the city's financial woes. The tribe tells the newspaper the town situation is the product of poor fiscal management. A 2009 agreement is at the heart of the dispute. The tribe and the town agreed to jointly build and manage the water utility that relies on Two Medicine Lake on the Blackfeet Reservation. The tribe is responsible for paying off the debt. But talks broke down shortly after the system came online. People began paying water bills to the tribe, bypassing the city. The elected town leaders say the absence of revenue from water customers is the cause of the financial problem. Both sides hold out the possibility of resuming talks to resolve the dispute. Native Americans in Montana are taking advantage of the state's newly expanded Medicaid coverage. Montana Public Radio's Katie Reardon reports.
Broadened eligibility for the government service came into effect in Montana in November of last year. Of the about 20,000 people who have enrolled since then, around 3,000 or 14% are Native American. That's according to Richard Opper, who is head of Montana's Department of Health and Human Services.
Indians comprise about 6.5% to 7% of our population, so we're getting a higher sign-up of Native Americans than is reflective in the general population.
Native American healthcare advocates have long lobbied Montana's lawmakers for extended Medicaid coverage. They have argued that the federal government's primary healthcare safety net for Natives, the Indian Health Service, is chronically underfunded. Opper praised the new enrollment numbers in front of a Montana legislative committee last week. He said Native Americans are overrepresented in the pool of low-income people eligible for benefits and expects more to take advantage of the coverage. Montana's Medicaid expansion now allows nearly anyone with an income below $16,200 a year to get health coverage. Native Americans comprise a little under a third of the estimated 70,000 Montanans with those qualifying incomes. For National Native News, I'm Katie Reardon.
The Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians removed Tribal Board Director Rita Gliptis following a marijuana possession conviction. Gliptis pleaded guilty to one count of marijuana possession last May. She was cited for possessing marijuana at the tribe's casino a year ago. A petition to remove her from office was presented to the tribal council last month. The council's hearing board issued its decision last week on the tribe's website. The Washington, D.C. NFL team says its new foundation to support Native Americans donated $3.7 million in its first year. The Washington Post reports the foundation paid for vans, computers, and winter coats for more than 20 tribes. The Original Americans Foundation was established as the team battled attacks from Native Americans that its name and mascot are racist. The financial statements were just released documenting gifts through February of last year. For the second year in a row, Yupik musher Pete Kaiser won the Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race in Alaska. The 28-year-old Bethel native was the first to cross the finish line Sunday morning. The race website lists his time as 40 hours, 36 minutes, and 21 seconds. The second-place winner came in about 8 minutes later. Kaiser takes home a $25,000 first prize. The organization reports he is the fourth person to win 2 years in a row. The 300-mile race runs from Bethel to Aniak and back. I'm Tara Gatewood.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to a Juneau afternoon. Our first guest is Nancy Peel. She and her husband, Doug, went for a ride on the Denali Highway and have a show to talk about it next Monday at 3 o'clock in Circle, Alaska. Nancy, thank you for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
First of all, so give us a geographic, what is the Denali Highway?
Well, the Denali Highway is the old highway that used to access Denali National Park before the Parks Highway was put in, and it starts from the Richardson Highway at Paxson and then basically cuts through the center of the state just south of the Alaska Range and then comes into the Parks Highway at Cantwell, about 20 miles south of the park. So it just cuts right through the heart of the interior.
How long is it?
It's 135 miles long. My bottom tells me so.
And why did you decide to take the Denali Highway?
Well, I'd never been there before. I'd never driven the highway. I'd seen pictures of it. I've read accounts and listened to accounts of people who have ridden it and driven it. I have friends who've driven it and camped it. And I just hatched a plan that I thought it might be kind of fun to ride it as part of a longer bike ride.
Do you have experience in long-term bike riding?
Well, I would say I have. I'm beginning to get experience. I haven't been. That was only my second bike tour, but it was really fun. And it started in Healy, and we pedaled up the Parks Highway, up through Fairbanks, down the Richardson to Paxson, and then we picked up the Denali Highway there and ended up back in Healy. So basically kind of a circuit of the interior.
And how long did it take you?
We did 10 days of riding. It was 460 miles total.
Did it shock you that you were going that far? You did your research, but you know, once you got on the road.
You know, I did research it. I knew what I was in for. I think my husband didn't really know what he was in for, but he was a champion.
For better or for worse.
For better or for worse. He ended up being the toughest of all of us.
How many people went?
There were four of us that went. So it was two couples. It was Doug and myself and then Lindy and Colleen Jones. And it was a delightful trip. It was hard. I think what we didn't anticipate were the number of hills. You tend to think, oh, the interior is flat. Well, it's not. We found that out.
Is your bike a professional road touring bicycle?
It's a touring bike. It's a long haul trucker that it's a basic heavy duty touring bike that I've had for about 3 or 4 years that I ride all the time anyway, but it is designed to carry heavy loads, and it did very well.
What were some of the awesome sights that you saw?
We saw, well, of course, the landscape is just absolutely stupendous, wide open, especially in the Denali Highway. It's essentially treeless country, and it's wide open, and there's nobody there, and it was just stunningly beautiful. And then what was very interesting and very unexpected is we saw caribou on the road, but what they would do is they would pace us as we were riding along, because they didn't want to go into the brushy country. So you'd be riding along right behind a group of caribou that were trotting down the highway, and it was fascinating. It was very fun.
What about the other terrors of the highway, people?
The people? We didn't.
And the drivers?
On the Denali Highway, there were relatively few drivers, and even in the whole trip that we did, traffic was really negligible. I think the only time we ran into any kind of traffic of any volume was between Fairbanks and Eielson Air Force Base, really down the Richardson Highway. But really, that's what makes Alaska so fun to bike tour in, because the traffic is very, very small. You know, and some of the roads we were on, you would go an hour or two and not see another car or truck.
Did you need to get any special permits?
None. That was the beauty of it. It was great. No permits.
What kind of stuff did you have to prepare before you went on the trip?
Well,
it's not like you could stop at the nearest 7-Eleven.
You know, you can't. But what we did do was we researched kind of the number of towns we would be going through, and there weren't a lot of towns. So we were well aware of what was there, so that we could resupply food, because we didn't want to carry all the food for all 10 days of riding. But anytime there was an opportunity to stop at a little mom-and-pop cafe, we always stopped. So most of the time, except for long stretches of the Denali Highway, we were able to find at least one place to stop and buy a meal. And then other than that, we had freeze-dried food, and we didn't starve. In fact, I don't think anybody even lost weight. So, but just kind of knowing where the supply points were helped us do some planning.
Was it fun? It was a lot of work, but was it fun?
It was a lot of work, but it was really fun. We're already trying to plan our next one.
Where might that be?
Well, one of our ideas is to do the Cassiar Highway, which I think would be fun. And it's so simple. You would just ride the ferry to Prince Rupert and ride from Prince Rupert up the Cassiar, then go to, end in Skagway, take the ferry back home. So that would be a very doable trip. So that's on our list.
What kind of advice would you give people?
My biggest advice would be to, this sounds really silly, but to practice with all your stuff that you're going to have hanging off your bicycle and all the gear that you have, and take some trial rides. We took a couple rides from town out to the campground at the glacier and did a couple of dry runs, and it was good that we did that, because you may think it all fits on your bike, but it might not. And sometimes you're taking way more stuff than you need, which we did.
I was going to ask you, what did you bring that you said, I didn't need this?
There was a lot of stuff that it was me more than anything else. I packed along a bear-resistant container, which wasn't necessarily, really wasn't necessary for bears. We didn't even saw any bears, but I brought it more for rodents, because my previous trip I did Haines to Skagway, I had a terrible time with rodents, eating through bags, and I wasn't going to let that happen. So I was willing to pack along a full bear-proof container. And then we had extra shelter. So each couple had a tent, and then I packed an extra tarp shelter, because I was afraid that if we were in terrible, terrible weather, I wanted a place to get out of the weather and to cook. And we did have some bad weather, and I'm glad we brought it. So, but I still brought too much stuff.
Well, your presentation is not tonight. It's next Monday night.
It's actually, the presentation is on the 28th. So I think it's next Thursday. Is that Thursday? Yeah. Yes.
At 5:15, Cycle Alaska.
I believe that is the case. Yep.
Nancy Peel, thanks so much for coming down and talking about your bike ride.
Well, thank you for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 18th of January, 2016. It's the third Monday in January, so today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It's the birthday of the man who gave us the thesaurus, Roget's thesaurus, Peter Mark Roget, born London, 1779. It's the birthday of the author and illustrator Raymond Briggs, London, 1934, whose most famous book was The Snowman. Just pictures, no words, story of a boy makes a snowman who comes alive. They go on adventures, they fly through the air, and the next morning the sun comes out and the snowman melts. It's the birthday of A.A. Milne, Alan Alexander Milne, London, 1882, went off to Cambridge, studied mathematics, took a job with Punch magazine, writing essays, light verse. He fought in two world wars. In World War I, he was injured in the Battle of the Somme. World War II, he was captain of the Home Guard. A successful playwright in his day, but known to us as a children's author. He wrote books for his son, Christopher Robin, who had stuffed animals, a piglet, a tiger, two kangaroos, and a donkey. And A.A. Milne wrote Winnie the Pooh, 1926, and The House at Pooh Corner, 1928. It was a reputation that A.A. Milne somewhat resented, being a children's author. And his son, Christopher Robin, resented it too. He wrote in his autobiography that his father had filched from me my good name and had left me with nothing but the empty fame of being his son. And it was on this day in 1788 the first convict ship of the First Fleet arrived in Australia from Great Britain, full of convicts. Britain had sent her convicts to America in the past, but after the American Revolution, that was not a possibility, and the prisons were becoming overcrowded, and so they sent them off to Australia, arrived in Botany Bay, what is now New South Wales, and they became a colony of farmers. Here's a poem for today by Lisa Kaufman, entitled Everybody Made Soups. After it all, the events of the holidays, the dinner tables passing like great ships, everybody made soups for a while, cooked and cooked until the broth kept the story of the onion, the weeping meat. It was over, the year was spent, the new one had yet to make its demands on us. Each day lay in the dark like a folded letter. Then out of it all, we made one final thing out of the bounty that had not always filled us, out of the ruined cathedral carcass of the turkey, the limp celery chopped back into plenty, the fish head, the spine, out of the rejected, the passed over, never the object of love. It was as if all the pageantry had been for this, the quiet after, the simmered light, the soothing shapes our mouths made as we tasted. Everybody Made Soups, a poem by Lisa Kaufman from Less Obvious Gods, published by Iris Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity.com, brain training developed by scientists to challenge memory and problem solving through online games. Lumosity.com. And by Staples, offering printer ink and toner cartridges for home and business, with in-store print shops offering customized presentations, booklets, and manuals. In-store and online, Staples make more happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 19 minutes past the hour, and you are 2-2 Juno afternoon here for Monday, the 18th of January, the year 2016. Martin Luther King Jr. birthday is observed today. In the studio now with me, Wayne Jensen, working on something going on this Wednesday that everyone is invited to.
That's right. This is the 31st annual community welcome reception for the legislators and staff who are in town visiting the capital city to the start of the legislative session, and it starts tomorrow, the session does, and the event is 5 o'clock to 6:30, Wednesday the 20th at Centennial Hall.
How many new legislators are there?
Boy, I don't know how many new, but there's 60 total, and then, of course, several of the staff members come with them, some staff members live here in town, but there's several staff members that come. So there's probably, you know, I don't know, well over 100, maybe 150 people coming into town, and then some of them have their spouses and significant others with them. So there could be, you know, 150, 200 people that come into town, plus, you know, the lobbyists and stuff once the session gets started. So it's a big influx into this community that at the session. It's great for our economy. Being a capital city is definitely a privilege that Juneau has, and, you know, we want to show them our hospitality, warm hospitality for that while they're here. You know, this is going to be a very difficult session, some really difficult issues to tackle this year, so we want them to feel real welcome in Juneau, that Juneau appreciates being the capital city, and hope they have a productive session.
How did the tradition get started?
You know, this is the 31st year, so if my math is correct, that goes back to 1985. And, you know, in the 80s and 90s, in June, even earlier than that, Juneau had gone through several capital move issues where there's proposals to move the capital or the legislature. And I think people got together and said, you know, we need to be proactive if, you know, being the capital is an important thing for Juneau, an important thing for the state, and, you know, we should be proactive and making sure people are welcome and well taken care of while they're here in the capital city during the session. So I think that's probably how it got started. The Alaska Committee has been, you know, participating in it now and sponsoring it for the last several years, but this reception actually goes back prior to the Alaska Committee being founded. So it's just something the community has done for a long time now.
And just packed full of people looking to welcome the legislators and get some free food.
Right, yeah, it's an opportunity to get some good food, but you know, as much as anything, it's just a matter of, you know, welcoming the legislators. And historically, most of the legislators show up at this event. They think this is a good one. They're not being lobbied for anything. It's a totally bipartisan event, and so it's a very friendly event, and got an opportunity for them to meet old friends here in Juneau, and it's an opportunity for us to say welcome to Juneau and hope you have a good stay here.
What are some of the businesses that are taking part?
You know, there's we were just talking about this earlier. I think there must be 60, 70 businesses that participate. This event is totally funded by contributions from the community. It's not funded by the city at all, other than the city, you know, gives us a little break on Centennial Hall, and they certainly provide some staff to help out. So, but the primary funding comes from businesses in the community and individuals. Some of the primary ones, some of the larger contributors are, say, Alaska. Alaska Airlines is a major sponsor. Barron's Mechanical, and of course I mentioned the city in terms of, you know, being able to allow us to have Centennial Hall at nonprofit rates, and then providing help with the people there that help out. So, but I'm going to guess, you know, and I didn't count them before I came, but I'm going to guess 60, 70, maybe even 80 businesses that participate either by giving us cash, which we need to help fund it, but also providing gifts. We have a gift bag that we give to every legislator, and they provide just little tokens of gifts from businesses around the community, and they're very generous in that regard.
Well, I already know which radio station to listen to. How many people do you expect?
Well, I we never really know. You know, sometimes it depends on the weather, but we've had as many as like 1,500. We probably have somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500, probably an average of 1,300 people. So it fills up Centennial Hall. We have all three ballrooms in Centennial Hall, and it's full. So it's very well attended. It's really well attended by the community. And like I said, it's very well attended by the legislators and staff. Most of them come. And usually the governor's office and some of the commissioners and some of the executive branch are there as well. So it's an opportunity to welcome them, too.
Wayne Jensen, thank you so much for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add that I might have forgotten to ask?
Well, I think this is just a great opportunity for our community to welcome those legislators and let them know that we appreciate their service to the state. So thank you very much.
It's Wednesday from 5 o'clock till 6:30.
Correct.
Centennial Hall.
Ma chère mademoiselle, it is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that we welcome you tonight. And now,
We invite you to relax. Let us pull up a chair as the dining room proudly presents your dinner. Be our guest. Be our guest. Put our service to the test. Tie your napkin round your neck, sherry, and we provide the rest. Soup du jour, hot hors d'oeuvre. Why, we only live to serve. Try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Don't believe me? Ask the dishes. They can sing, they can dance. After all, miss, this is France. And a dinner here is never second best. Go on, unfold your menu, take a glance, and then you'll be our guest. We our guest, be our guest. Beef ragout, cheese souffle, pie and pudding on flambé. We'll prepare and serve with flair a culinary cabaret. You're alone and you're scared, but the banquet's all prepared. No one's gloomy or complaining while the flatware's entertaining. We tell jokes, I do tricks with my fellow candlesticks.
Put it all in perfect taste that you can best.
Come on and lift your glass, you've won your own free pass. Be our guest.
If you're stressed, it's fine dining we suggest.
Be our guest, be our guest, be our guest.
Life is so unnerving for a servant who's not serving. He's not whole without a soul to wait upon. Ah, those good old days when we were useful. Suddenly those good old days are gone. 10 years we've been rusting, needing so much more than dusting, needing exercise, a chance to use our skills. Most days we just lay around the castle. Flabby, fat, and lazy, you walked in and oops-a-daisy!
It's a delicious guest, thanks a lot, but I'll be blessed. Once important, thanks a lot, I bet the napkin's freshly pressed. With this food, she'll walk in, and my dear, that's fine with me. While the cups do this, I'll shoo it, I'll be bubbling, I'll be brewing, I'll get warm, I've been hot. Heaven's sake, you'd rather stop. Please, we want the company impressed. We've got a lot to do. Is it one love or two? For you, our guest.
We are guests.
We are guests.
We are guests. We are guests. We are guests. I'm so glad you're here. If thank you, we had anybody here. And we're a guest. We don't feel, we don't feel. Just to be here. While the candle lights to glory, let us down to this evening. For time
costs one by one.
From Beauty and the Beast. Time is 28 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to a Juno Afternoon here on KTVO and KRNN FM. In the studio with me now is Swarupa Toth from AWARE, here to talk about upcoming advocacy classes. Thank you for coming in, Swarupa.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm really glad to be here. And that was really a rousing welcome, I got to tell you. I'm really excited, so it's appropriate to invite people to the advocacy training. It starts February the 1st, 2 weeks from today, and it's a 40-hour training. It's about 2 weeks in length. So it's two Saturdays, two Sundays, and a couple of Monday nights and Thursday nights. So you can still, you know, do your job and come to this. And really, it's mostly training for AWARE staff, new volunteers, a lot of our sister agencies, people who volunteer or staff at sister agencies like Bartlett Regional Hospital, JPD, SAIL, Catholic Community Services, Glory Hole staff, Clinkett and Haida, court clerks, JBs, VISTAs, counselors, teachers, and we invite interested community members to come and participate.
What kind of topics are taught?
Well, the basics, of course, which are always really interesting for everybody to know about, the history of the battered women's movement and the foundation of domestic violence and sexual assault, It's really helpful to understand what is an advocate and how does an advocate support and empower. How do we empower one another? Legal advocacy services is really pretty amazing, and we go through those services. We understand more about child abuse, cultural competency, of course, prevention, and rural advocacy, advocacy to communities outside of Juneau.
For people who are just arriving into town, they may not know what AWARE is. Could you give us a capsulated picture?
Oh, AWARE is a lot of things. It's a shelter for women and children who have been abused by domestic violence, child abuse, sexual assault. What the name stands for is Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies. So we have a shelter, and we also have a new transitional housing shelter. But we also offer all of these services, legal advocacy and support groups. We have a lot of prevention programs. As a matter of fact, we're starting up our new season. People can come to become volunteers to coach Girls on the Run, the third through fifth grade after-school program, or the boys program, E2Wutklatsin, Strengthen Your Spirit for third to fifth grade boys. So anybody who wants to coach for those kinds of volunteer opportunities. But we're there really to help in every way we possibly can.
It must be pretty powerful being in a room with a bunch of people who have the same drive and energy.
It's so beautiful, and that's why getting together with our sister agencies or anybody who really has an interest in serving individuals, especially over a two-week period, that's what I believe makes this training so different than some of the beautiful online courses that are so great. But this is, you get together with a group of people, you really get to digest this information from somebody who's worked in the field day to day over the years. You can ask questions, and then you can digest that, wait a couple of days, and then come back for the next topic. So after 2 weeks, you've really gotten a working understanding of what we do, what we have to offer, and how you might contribute to that.
What are some other volunteering opportunities with AWARE?
Well, you know, the main thing at AWARE, I think, is that it's kind of like a shelter. It's like a house. So cooking and cleaning and shopping and child care, it's like running a family. But we also have the coaching opportunities, which I think are so much fun, being a Girls on the Run coach and the Boys Run coaches. We also have gardening, which we'll be preparing for in the spring, recycling, admin projects, and I like to have, I'm the legal advocate, so I like to have professional civil legal help anytime that I can. So if you're retired or you're having the summer off and a teacher, we sure could use your help.
So this is a 40-hour training total and takes place on weekends and Monday and Thursday evenings.
Right, right. It's actually spread out really well for people who are working, you know, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. It starts at 5:30 on Monday and Thursdays and goes to either 7:30 or 8:30. And you get a certificate of completion, and you really walk away with a greater understanding of how to support yourself in a healthy relationship and your community.
How much legal stuff do you touch on?
It's only the beginning there. It's really amazing. But we do a lot about how a protective order works, which is created in the women's movement sort of as an if-so facto divorce to help create a space so that a decision can be made about separation. And then we also work with divorce and custody. And another part of the legal work that we do is supporting victims of sexual assault or domestic violence assault crimes to support them through the process of going to court, court accompaniment, going through a trial where they have to testify, and just being there with them every step of the way.
And there's the free lunch.
And then there's the free lunch, which is always really yummy because everybody brings extra. There's a special invitation I wanted to put out. It's called the Heart Team. And the Heart Team is really wanting to increase our size. It's a team of trained advocates who respond 24/7 to Bartlett Regional Hospital emergency room, domestic violence and sexual assault victims. So it could be any time, night or day, in the middle of the night or during the day, usually AWARE staff responds. But this team can be people who don't work at AWARE. And the job really is to volunteer to offer compassionate and confidential listening. You'll be trained in trauma-informed services, and you'll be trained in how to offer our available follow-up services and safety planning in the moment. So this is what HEART stands for, is Hospital Emergency Advocacy Response Team. And you sign up for 1 week out of a month or 1 week out of 6 weeks, and you're on call. And you go there, and you are in the emergency room with somebody until they get to a safe place.
Now, you offer this course twice a year?
That's right. Yeah, we'll offer it again in September.
About how many people show up?
Well, you know, I didn't mention that it is a two-parter. Usually we'll start out with as many as 20 people. And then part two is if you really want to be a staff or an active volunteer, then you'll go through part two, which is probably the last 15 hours. And that would start February the 13th and 14th. Those are the last 2 days, that last weekend. And then by then, it's usually down to about 10 people, something like that. So it's a really nice size group to be in. You can disappear if you want to, or you can really participate actively.
It seems like the advocacy training is important not only for people who are going to volunteer, but also just the general community.
Totally. You know, many people who are community members who want to learn more just for their own sake, or if you have children or grandchildren or friends or neighbors that you feel like you want to help or support. Or, you know, if you, like I said, if you have a job, it could be dental assistant. It could be, you know, there's so many times when you're hair cutters, you know, you have contact with people and you feel like, gosh, I wish I had a little more depth of understanding so that I could offer my support. That's what the advocacy training is all about, really empowering yourself and other people.
Sarah Patan, thank you so much for coming down the station.
Thank
is there
you.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Yeah, there's one more thing I always like to say at the end. If you or anyone you know is experiencing domestic violence or sexual assault, please call AWARE at 586-6623. Or if you're not in Juneau, please call our toll-free number, 1-800-478-1090. All of our services are free and confidential.
Sarah, thank you for coming down.
Thanks, Jeff.
Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau, offering aqua aerobics on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. until 12 p.m., and stretch aquatics on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45 a.m. Schedules are available online at juneau.org/parkrec/pool. More information at 586-5325.
This is Bird Note. Our most commonly seen woodpeckers are northern flickers, beautiful tan birds with brightly colored underwings, spotted belly, barred back, and bold black breastplate. When a flicker takes flight, a bold patch of white feathers flashes on its rump, in sharp contrast to its brown body. Against the dark forest edge, only this white flash shows up. This white rump very likely evolved at least in part as an anti-predator adaptation. A hawk flying in pursuit of a flicker may fix on the conspicuous white spot, rather than the darker image of the whole bird. This gives the flicker a split-second advantage as it suddenly dodges into the trees. Then, as it clamps itself to a tree trunk, the white target disappears beneath its folded wings. An instant of confusion for the hawk allows just enough time for the flicker to sidle around to the other side of the tree. Such sharply contrasting patterns, the snap from conspicuous to cryptic visual signals, are widespread in nature. Think of the dark then light flash of an alarmed school of fish, or the erratic bouncing of the cottontail rabbit's white tail as it darts into the brush ahead of a chasing coyote. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
I have a dream. like four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Georgia boy in 1929. When black and white were separate, he dared to cross the line. He watched as others called him by the color of his skin, and he knew he'd have to change things from the way they'd always been. So he raised his voice, and this is what he said: we have to change the world, change the world, change the world with our hearts. I have a dream. In the name of civil rights, there were those who tried to stop him when they blamed him for the fight. But every time he went to jail, he managed to survive, 'cause Martin trusted righteousness to keep his dream alive. And when he raised his voice, this is what he said: what about my people? We have the right to stand tall. What about my people? We have to change the world. It was an April night in Memphis when his life came to an end. Now millions speak the message of the man they call their friend. We shall overcome, 'cause the prejudice is wrong. The dream is still alive, someday
station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas.
Treadwell Ice Arena is open 7 days a week, offering drop-in open skating, hockey, and a variety of special events. We are the proud home of the Crimson Bears hockey team, youth, adult, hockey, and figure skating programs. More information at juno.org/parksrec/ice rink or call 586-0410.
Program support provided by the Juno Pro-Choice Coalition, hosting the 9th Annual LunaFest on January 22nd at Centennial Hall, a collection of short films by, for, and about women. The event includes door prizes, a silent auction, and a performance by the Juno Pride Chorus Ensemble. All proceeds benefit the Breast Cancer Fund and Juno Pro-Choice Coalition. Doors open at 6 p.m. Program begins at 6:30. Tickets available at lunafest.org, Heartside Books, from board members, or at the door.
Perseverance Theater presents a world premiere by Tlingit playwright Vera Starbard. Our voices will be heard. Come witness this new story of a mother's fierce love for her young daughter and the lengths she will go to protect her. This powerful play raises the question, will we stay silent when met with family violence, or will we be resilient and speak out to end the cycle? Our Voices Will Be Heard opens on January 15th. For more information and tickets, visit ptalaska.org, The Jack, and Hearthside Books.
Thank you.
Democracy Now! Is a national, daily, independent, award-winning news program hosted by Amy Goodman. Pioneering the largest public media collaboration in the U.S., Democracy Now! Provides access to people and perspectives rarely heard, including independent and international journalists and ordinary people from around the world who are directly affected by U.S. foreign policy. You can hear Democracy Now! Weeknights at 9 on KTOO News Juno.
Weather forecast for tonight, cloudy skies with isolated rain showers, low temperatures 33 to 36 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, cloudy skies with scattered rain showers, high temperatures around 39 degrees. Tuesday night, cloudy skies with scattered rain showers, and scattered rain showers predicted for Thursday as well. Coming up on a June afternoon tomorrow, we'll talk about Banghart and about the Alaska State Museum, and we'll get a preview of Tony Yorba's World Class World Affairs Council presentation.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast.